his question, who did you bring to church?
We had a discussion earlier as to whether it's the podium or the dais, and it's actually both. Podium being the thing you stand on, as in a Godly person. So, as I said, the educational parts are included as well as the past. So happy to be here this morning. Nice to see all of you. There are a few little things that maybe you do need to know for context and what's going on. Nancy mentioned that I'm a hospital chaplain. I've been doing that for 11 and a half years. And for 10 and a half years, I've been down in Cambridge at Behavioral Health, which is for both mental illness and addiction, which has just been just marvelous. I love it. So before that, for 30 years before that, I was a math professor at the Naval Academy. There will not be a quiz, but that will also come to play after a bit here. So, and the other thing is that I'm going to break with my usual scheme. For many, many, many years, sermons, whether they were in regular churches or Unitarian churches, always start off with a reading, and then you had the sermon that followed from the reading and stuff like that. I certainly haven't ever done that, but today I will. So, if you want to read along, it's number 468 in the back of the hymnal. One of my favorite readings anyway, but also appropriate for the sermon. I'll just read the whole thing. We need one another. We need one another when we mourn and would be comforted. We need one another when we are in trouble and afraid. We need one another when we are in despair and temptation and need to be recalled to our best selves again. We need one another when we would accomplish some great purpose and cannot do it alone. We need one another in the hour of success when we look for someone to share our triumphs. We need one another in the hour of defeat when, with encouragement, we might endure and stand again. We need one another when we come to die and have gentle hands prepare us for the journey. All our lives we are in need and others are in need of us. So one thing I've learned, particularly working down in the psych ward, our lives are filled with relationships. Some of these are strong and some of them are weak. Some are helpful to us and some are harmful. And often, we're not fully aware of the impact some of these relationships have on us, and that includes this morning. I wonder if you've ever had the same thing that happens to me from time to time. I'll be sitting in church and discover that something I did not expect is now on my mind. Just pops up out of nowhere. Well, of course, it's not from nowhere. It's been bubbling around in the back of my brain for some time. But for some reason, now is the time that it comes to the surface. Sometimes these are random thoughts. Probably not a good idea to go into more detail on those right now. Some of them are a bit weird, but some are insightful. At least I think so. For this morning, I want to focus on the times where someone is a focus of these thoughts that bubble up from our subconscious. So, I'm going to throw in a little story here. As I said, I deal with people with mental illness and stuff. And the Quaker meeting, I've been going to the Quakers for 5 or 6 years now, and it's silence. You sit and whatever happens, happens, okay, for an hour. And one morning, I was sitting there, and just suddenly, the song Let It Be came into my head. And I thought, yeah, nice song, I like that. I'm not real sure it applies to me this morning, but, you know, still worth thinking about. And after a few minutes, it passed on through. And about 15 minutes later, the song came back again. And I thought, now that's something. Why is the song coming back to me? I don't know that it's anything for me. And then I thought about the song some more. And, you know, Mother Mary comes to me. And who is this Mother Mary? And why is she saying, let it be? You know, that seems, I don't know, ambiguous. It could just be, don't worry about it or whatever. I'm not sure what that means and stuff. And sure enough, another 15 minutes later, the song comes back a third time. If you, and the kind of rules of the quicker meeting are. If you feel like this is for others, then you stand up and you share it. But I didn't have that feeling this morning. I thought, I just don't have that feeling. I'm going to keep this to myself. And besides, Nancy is the expert in all things Beetle. And so I went, after meeting, I asked her, so what's the story on this song? Well, the story on the song turns out to be that Mother Mary was Paul McCartney's mother. She died when he was a young teenager. And in fact, if you saw the Carpool karaoke with him, he mentions this in there. And he said when he got to be successful, all this stuff was happening. He didn't know what to deal with it. And whenever that happened, he would hear his mother's voice. And she would say, let it be. It'll turn out. It'll be okay. And I thought, well, that's really neat. I like that. I'm not sure why it came to me, but it was interesting. So the next day, I was at the hospital. And one of our patients had lost her mother 5 years before. She had a very close relationship with her mother. And after her mother died, she just went downhill, and could not see a way forward from there. And so I was talking with her, and that story sort of came out a bit. And for reasons I still do not understand, I asked her what her mother's name was. And it was Mary. And so I told her the story. And as I did, things don't change immediately. I'll tell you that up front. But you can see maybe this was the start of how you would find a way to have a positive, have that person who used to be such a positive force in your life continue being a positive force in your life. So sometimes these thoughts just come. Okay. Now, as human beings, our lives are made up of a myriad of relationships. I tell you that for whatever reason, relationships are more important to me than they are to many other people. But I think the point is valid nonetheless. We have so many different relationships in our lives, people, places, things, activities, jobs, and even more. As a hospital chaplain, I do a lot of grief work. Grief comes from the fact that we normally keep our relationships more or less balanced. We know the relative importance of our spouse's birthdays and that compared to going to a baseball game with a friend. Sometimes one of the significant relationships in our lives becomes disrupted, sometimes by death, but sometimes by things like someone moving away or retiring in the case of a job. At that point, our delicate balance of relationships is now out of whack. What follows is a process of reevaluating all the remaining relationships and figuring out how they all balance now. This causes quite a disruption in our thought process, made more mysterious by the fact that pretty much it seems to take place in the background. One thing that happens during this process is that certain somewhat random feelings will come up out of the deep from time to time. Often it's not clear how these feelings relate to the process of sorting out the change in this relationship, but mostly they do in some way or another. Regardless, it is often of value to consider why these things pop up. Now, while I'm on the subject of grief, which I do a lot of, I would like to point out that once you have resorted all the relationships, it's not uncommon for the whole issue to pop up again a few years later. So one, be prepared for this. And two, the second time is usually much easier than the first time. And it may help to understand why this comes up again. The answer is that you resolved all the relationship things at the certain point in time. Time has now gone by and you are now a different person. Some of your relationships have changed. Well, and you have changed. The solution you came to a few years ago may no longer be working so well, but more often than not, what is needed now is a bit of a tweak or kind of a check-in just to be sure that the resolution from a few years ago is still working. Some part of your brain says, is all this still going okay? And the other part of your brain says, yep, it's okay. Or maybe it's not. But what I have to say today is not aimed specifically at those of you who might be going through a grieving process. It's just that from time to time, some of these relationship issues can arise. It's good to be aware of them, and it can be a value to spend some time on. Let me give you an example. In the summers, the Quaker group in Easton meets in the old meeting house. This is the one built in 1684. So needless to say, there's no air conditioning, there's no electricity either. So we always had the windows open. This lets all the smells of summer come wafting through. one rather hot morning that was a smell of hot pine sap. And suddenly, I was filled with a vague dread. I spent some time thinking about this and concluded that this was reminding me of Boy Scout summer camp. You see, I never really fit in with the Boy Scouts, and summer camp was not something I looked forward to. The smell triggered a return of those feelings. But now, I've placed those feelings and how they related to my past, and I can move on. So let's talk about whom you brought with you to church today. There are going to be a lot of open questions here. This is meant to give you a chance to consider things for yourself. It's not a quiz, but I would ask that you do give some thought to these things. So let's start with the person who walked in the door with you. Well, unless you came in separate cars. I should say that if you came by yourself, that's okay. You may find something in this anyway. What are your feelings towards your significant other this morning? And how is that coloring your approach to church? Maybe you have a long history of church with her. Maybe being here reminds you of so many other Sunday mornings. Or maybe of Sunday mornings that were in a different place. Or were of a greater or lesser significance. Maybe things were a little tense this morning, not so smooth getting out of the house. Still a bit up in the air, not so settled. For others of you, the term significant other might refer to someone who's no longer with us. Died, perhaps, or the relationship is over. Doesn't mean they aren't here with you. I hope that's a good thing, but if it's not a good thing, it's still a thing. It's important to be aware of these feelings and how they affect how you see things this morning. And then there are some of you for whom significant other doesn't really mean other. You are unto yourself. No need or interest for another person in your life. And that's fine. I'll have something for you and everyone else later on. Another strong relationship in our lives is our birth family, our parents and our siblings. Now, my mother always referred to Unitarians as church light. From her point of view, she was probably right. But you know, from time to time, I feel very close to both my parents. Maybe even closer because of the things we didn't agree on, you know, like church. Or things they couldn't understand, like my feelings for mathematics and statistics. And from time to time, I find myself wondering, what would Mother think of me now? In working at the hospital, I've come to understand that many families are not like mine. Parents can be quite indifferent to their children. Some are hostile, abusive. Some are notably absent. I think about one of my patients who had 19 different foster families before she aged out of the system at age 18. And then I appreciate the stability that my parents gave me, a stability that I hadn't realized was so important until I saw the consequences of its absence. On the other hand, maybe the person who's with you this morning is someone from history. Maybe you think about Thomas Jefferson, who's often claimed by Unitarians. Certainly, many of his principles are a foundation of the UU faith. At the same time, he was a very complex man. What about his relationship with slaves? That's complicated. Plus, he was said to be not at all easy to get along with. How would he fit in here today? And what does it mean that your mind is on this history? Or maybe you brought Ralph Waldo Emerson with you. Quite an interesting fellow. From our viewpoint, it's hard to imagine how great a shift they made towards liberal Christianity in the early 1800s. But certainly, they were in tune of the times in thinking for yourself. And I sometimes wonder about those folk who oversaw the merger of the Unitarians and Universalists in the 1960s. Granted, there wasn't a whole lot of difference by that time, but still, to be able to get past the idea of a separate heritage was a pretty big accomplishment. And then later, to come up with the principles and purposes. First, it took some guts, maybe chutzpah, to just figure out that we can write this down. I know that other denominations do this, but they usually begin by claiming divine guidance, and the folk who wrote principles and purposes didn't get to use that one. And on top of that, it's lasted all this time. And then there are those among us who have died. I've often thought of Dave Hilton, if you remember him here at UUCR. Dave is on my mind for several reasons lately. I always liked Dave. He had that kind of personality, someone almost everybody liked. And Dave was a recovering alcoholic. In my years at the hospital, I've worked with a lot of alcoholics. The process of recovering is highly mysterious. I have to say I have a somewhat hazy concept of addiction, but I know that one important aspect is that addicts don't think like non-addicts, and that difference leads to lots of problems. Just say no. In so many ways, the addict way of thinking is so very destructive. It's impulsive. It's narcissistic, so it has trouble with relationships. But then the question is, how do addicts get into recovery, and how do they manage these destructive parts of their thought process? I have pretty much no idea, but I have Dave, among others, to use as examples of how it can work extremely well for these people. I'm also thinking of Dave because he died of prostate cancer. He was in remission for quite a few years and then it came back. And last month I had surgery for prostate cancer. And then there's a category I bet you hadn't thought about, those from the future. In some part, did we bring with us those we haven't even met yet? Those nameless faces that may or may not cross this threshold? I think a fair bit of what we do is for the benefit of those yet to come. Not just children born into our congregation, but others who might one day walk to the doors in their quest for truth. Or even those who never end up walking into our sanctuary. We feel that what we are doing is important just to be here. It's important that there be a place that values equality and thinking and fairness and integrity. Are these the people you brought with you this morning? And there's one last person to consider. For those of you who do not feel the need of a significant other, this is what I promised you a while back. Did you bring you this morning? Or better, which you did you bring this morning? Even better than that, which of the yous did you bring this morning? All of us have many facets to our personality. We're parent and child, husband and wife, talker and listener. We may, well, I'm guessing, have our not-so-polite side. Is that with us now? Hint, yes. Better question is, in what way is that side with us now? Are we okay with that side of us? And if not, what are we going to do about it? We probably have an impatient side. When is it going to get to the point? How does that side fit in or fail to fit in with the rest of you this morning? We have a side whose mind wanders. When I get home, I've got to trim those branches. This side leading you completely astray, in which case you probably noticed me asking a question. So, and then there is the us that is of years gone by. I think about when I was first introduced to UUism, how exciting it was. I remember that the thing that impressed me the most was it was okay to laugh in church. And that takes me back further. As a child, I went to the Presbyterian church with my parents on Sunday, and the Seventh-day Adventist church on Saturday with my grandmother. Now, the Presbyterian church was just a generic Protestant. Not like the Southern Baptist that was common in Texas, but probably indistinguishable from pretty much any Methodist church around. The Seventh-day Adventists were a different story. The main adjective I would use for that is scary. They really loved Revelation. We're in the end times, they would say, with some delight. Lots of very literal fire and brimstone. And trust me, no one ever laughed in that church. So you see that UUism was a big shift from that. But my childhood churches are a part of my past. It certainly has to color much of what I see now. I will say that as Nancy and I travel and see a wider variety of religions, I've come to see better how the predominant religion has an effect on the entire society. And I expect that this is true of me as well. My own religious background certainly colors how I see things today, probably in ways I'm not even aware of. as we say at the hospital, it's complicated. So you see, we bring a lot of people with us to church. These people are pretty much constantly with us. I don't try to use the HOV lane based on that, though. But if you do, I'll come visit you in the psych ward. At the outset, I said that it's good to be aware of all these folk with us, and I stand by that. But I think it's more important to embrace these folk. They're a big part of our lives. We wouldn't be the same without them, even the not-so-admirable ones of them. Embrace them and rejoice. Life would be lonely without them. And now I would like to hear whom you brought with you to church today. And I'll get things started. Both of Nancy's parents were only children, so she has no first cousins. But she has some more distant cousins. Lois was one of these. Lois would have turned 91 on New Year's Day. Lois lived life her way. She left her small town in Ohio to go to Los Angeles to be a newspaper reporter. When she came back, she had a same-sex partner. Lois and Jean lived together for many years, and this was not popular with some of Lois's family. Then Jean died, and due to a legal mix-up, Lois lost her share of their nice home. For the years I knew her, Lois's story was one of a shrinking world. She lost her home, then her health. When her eyesight faded, she lost her car and her independence. Then she lost her beloved cat. So this past summer, Lois had to move into a nursing home. She hated it, even though she seemed to get along with the staff. I don't know if she hated the nursing home or she hated seeing her life slowly slip away. Then, in July, Nancy got the phone call that Lois had died in her sleep, peacefully. It was about the only peace she'd had in many years. No one knows why, but Lois was always in love with the neighbor cabin. I arranged for her to come to graduation with me one year, and she was absolutely thrilled. So as her funeral drew to a close, I said there would be one more song. It was Anchors Away. It was a kind of a 1930s recording, and it had people singing. It had the lyrics in it, which you don't hear much of. In the lyrics, it talks about going out to sea for one more adventure. I think that really summed up Lois. So tell me who you brought this morning.